This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Imagine you have been investing 1 lakh rupees every year in a financial product. After 5 years, you realize that you cannot continue with it anymore. You want to redeem your money. And then you discover that you will only get 2.5 lakh in return, even though you paid 5 lakh rupees so far. How will you feel? Disappointed, right? That is exactly what happens in endowment insurance policies, where insurance and investment are linked in one product. Terminating such policies in the middle of the policy period results into huge losses for policyholders. Well, insurance regulator IRDA did propose a few regulations in this regard in December 2023, which would have benefited policyholders, which would have hiked your surrender value. But earlier this week, we came to know that IRDA has junked its proposals and maintained status quo on the matter. Why did it happen? To discuss the same, I have with me Sumit Ramani. He's an actuary and co-founder at Protect Me Well.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Welcome, Sumit.
Hi, Parajita. Thank you for having me here.
Glad to have you here. So first thing first, why did it happen? Because I feel that when IRDA came out with these proposals, so somebody from insurance industry, people from insurance industry would have created those proposals. They understand the matter. They came out with it and now they have junked it. So why did it happen?
Right. So I'm obviously not privy to the details of why it was, what was the thought process behind it. But based on my experience, let me hazard a guess. If you realize there is a lot of noise around mis-selling of insurance policies, and when people realize that they have been missold or they have bought the product that they don't need, they decide to surrender. And if you surrender, you get only a fraction of premiums that you have paid, which creates which is not a happy situation to be in. And one way to solve that is to probably give them a higher surrender benefit. So instead of, let's say, getting 50% of the overall premiums that you have paid, you'd be giving them away 80-85% of it. But then it's important to also realize that this higher surrender benefit would come at a cost of someone else, and who that individual or stakeholder would be. Assuming insurance companies continue to make same amount of profits, agents continue to earn same amount of commissions, the expenses of insurance companies are same as what they were. So this would eventually be then paid from the pocket of maturing policyholders, which in my mind is not fair. It's like saying that I bought a ticket for my flight. On the day before the travel, I decided to cancel the policy, cancel the ticket. And then I want full refund, right? Because I did not take the flight. So if airlines were to give you full refund, it has to be recouped from someone, because that seat that you had booked for is now going to be vacant, right? So there is a loss that airline company would make. So either they bear the loss or they recoup it from someone else, which means that they'll have to increase the average fare from point A to point B. So essentially, to make it look fairer for someone who decided to terminate the contract halfway through, we would have ended up penalizing the maturing policyholders had we gone ahead with higher surrender benefits, which I think, rolling back in my mind, is a right thing to do. And then you might ask, then what happens to the policyholders who surrendered early, and what about mis-selling? In my view, it's not a good idea to link mis-selling with higher surrender benefits. or saying that a higher surrender benefit would solve the problem of mis-selling. Higher surrender benefit is essentially softening the blow. The damage would be done, but it would come at the cost of maturing policyholders. So if you want to solve mis-selling, there are other ways to do it, but increasing higher surrender benefit doesn't solve
but
for it.
But not just mis-selling angle, but since these products are pitched as investment product, so keeping that perspective in mind, then if somebody wants to stop investing in these kind of financial products, then there has to be something for them so that they cannot be penalized to, you know, terminate the policy beforehand. So, okay, penalizing is fine, but to what extent? Here, no money is returned after 1 year and only 30% is returned after 2 years, 35% after 3 years, then 50%, and in the long run, 90%. So this is what we are talking about, that we should have found a middle way out. If not full money, if not 100%, but at least something. It has to improve from what it is now. I understand that insurance companies incur cost when they are selling a policy, but this system doesn't work out that way. And probably that is the reason why insurance industry is not going to that extent, because there is indeed mistrust towards insurance companies precisely for these reasons. And every day I hear such stories about people want to surrender their policies and they discover that they are going to lose their money, and then they decide to continue with it or they simply make it paid up. So these issues are a lot, and persistency ratio is about 50%, nearly 50% across all insurance companies, could be higher or lower, but on an average 50%. Then after 5 years, if 50% people are surrendering the policies, then we have to practically think about it. That is what is happening. So your thoughts on it, because I feel that at least some bit of surrender value should have been increased.
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of questions inbuilt in one.
Yes.
I'll try and unpack some of them. Talking about some benefit to those who decide to not continue. So there's obviously an option of going for a paid up option. So wherein you choose not to pay the future premiums and still get maturity and death benefit.
But paid up value is also quite low.
No, the IRRs in paid up would still be positive as opposed to negative in when you choose to surrender. Right. So, I think, okay, maybe there's a starting point here is that you entered into a 30-year contract and you decided to terminate it halfway through, and you want to be treated fairly, and fairly at the cost of someone who is continuing to be there for 30 years. So the challenge starts when we start comparing insurance industry with mutual funds, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's where the comparison, if you look at it from customer's lens, that's the comparison.
Not just mutual fund, but PPF also.
So the way these two, the way insurance industry is different from every other financial instrument or industry offering financial instruments is essentially there is a concept of pooling which is fundamental to insurance. So, if you talk about protection focused insurance, let's say term insurance, everyone is paying premium so that one or two people who actually claim, their claims are settled. So you can't end up saying that I paid money, but I did not get any claim, right? And why should I fund for someone else? So if you don't want fund for someone else, then go ahead, build your own death benefit corpus, right? And which would be very, very costly. So while you want a cover for term insurance of 1 crore at the cost of, let's say, 15,000, but you don't want to... don't realize that there is an element of cross-subsidy inbuilt, right? If you want 1 crore at death and don't want to subsidize it for someone else, build 1 crore corpus for yourself. Mm-hmm. So in insurance, there would always be an element of cross-subsidy. There would be maturing policyholders would get benefit because of surrendering policyholders, because if that doesn't happen, then the IRRs that you get, that maturing policyholders get, would not be comparable.
And then IRR would be lower.
IRR would be lower. Then you might end up saying, then what purpose that insurance products serve, right? It does not, doesn't neither give a higher IRR not gives me good death benefit, and surrendering policyholders anyway don't get anything.
Yeah. So that message must go to people investing in these products, because people don't get into these products in the first place. And if they have indeed, then they have to have an exit option.
Yeah, it's like saying insurance is more like saying, okay, I pay more tax than someone else, but I get exact same roads that someone else gets to drive on, right? So there is an element of cross subsidy, and that's fundamental to insurance. That's the only way it works, and hence it's not comparable to mutual funds, wherein the cross subsidy is only to the extent of amortizing cost of fund manager, which is very, very small, and hence you see the exit charges are also very, very limited. In here, a surrendering policy holder is compensating for maturing policy holders. And that's the only way the product becomes viable.
So you think that insurance companies will come out with fresher, newer products where IRR could be lower, but with higher surrender value? Could that happen in future? Because in one of points, the regulator did mention that there could be new products.
Yeah, there could be new products, but would you buy it?
At least, yeah, we will not buy it. But what I feel is when somebody, when an agent or an intermediary is pitching this product, then do they tell people about it? That if they really want to surrender, if they really want to exit midway, then what will happen? Do people know about it? Because I feel that it comes to them as a surprise. They are not aware of it, and they must be told about these nuances when somebody is selling them these policies. That is what
Essentially, if you think about it, you don't buy an insurance policy with the intention to surrender it. Right? If you ever wanted to surrender it in 5 years, why buy it? Right? So a policy or a contract should be good and efficient for those who decide to stay for the entire duration of the contract. And it can't look worse for those who decide to terminate the contract halfway through. So the challenge is not higher or lower surrender benefit. The challenge is, are you buying the policy that you actually need?
Right? Yes.
Do you know the policy that you are buying? Right? Do you know that if you're buying a life insurance contract, it is going to be a 20-year contract. You get benefit only when you stick around for 20 years. If you decide to exit early, you basically get lesser than what you paid for. Is that something that you know when you are entering into it? Is the question. So the problem... So that's why I said it's important to segregate mis-selling and surrender benefits. Because surrender benefit essentially is not a solution to mis-selling. It's trying to soften the blow for people who are probably mis-sold. Right? And mis-selling is not the only reason why people surrender. I might have committed 1 lakh of premium for next 20 years, but there could be financial trouble that I land into. And I may not be able to pay premiums for after 5 years. And then I surrender, right?
Okay.
So if we delink these two, I think then situation becomes a lot clearer.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I also want to understand this point that insurance companies have been putting forth about asset liability mismatch, that if they were to offer higher surrender value, then the asset liability will not be aligned in when they are investing further in maybe forward market contracts. So if you can shed light on this aspect, and how do insurance companies manage this pool of money they receive via premiums?
So asset liability matching is a big deal in a life insurance setting. So I'll try and simplify it. So think of a non-participating non-linked contract, which is basically endowment policy where benefits are guaranteed on day zero. You pretty much know what you get. You exactly know what you're going to get if you mature, if you surrender, or if there are any survival or money back benefits, right? But then the premiums are paid year on year, right? So while insurance companies or fund managers and insurance companies would know what is the rate of government bond they would get today, if they buy it for 30-year duration, they know what that they're going to get. But they would not know what the rates would look like the following year, the year later, 15 years later. So they have to make a judgment around it. Now, this is easier if you know that everyone is going to stay till the end of the term, or which is equivalent to saying that everyone is going to hold the bond till the maturity. Right. Then, I invested 100, I'm going to get 200 after 10 years. Mm-hmm. And if I have bought a bond which is matching to my outgo, I'm sorted. Mm-hmm. Now, one fine day you decide after 5 years that, no, I can't continue for 10 years or 20 years. I want to surrender my policy. Mm-hmm. So then equivalently, fund manager will have to sell corresponding bonds to be able to make good that liability or match that cash flow. Mm-hmm. This behavior is, in any case, is difficult to predict. Now you're saying that now I want to play around with surrender benefits, which would change behaviors. And I don't know how the behavior would change. So I would have further problems in matching those assets and liabilities, which comes with a cost, and someone will have to pay that cost.
Mm-hmm. The way in EPFO, 15% incremental money goes into equities, and that is how they are offering more than 8% IRR, annual interest rate. So can something be worked upon in insurance industry also in that manner?
Yeah. So if you want to compare EPFO, if you want to compare EPFO or mutual mm-hmm. fund with insurance, compare ULIPs. In ULIPs, there aren't any surrender charge after 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You get exactly your fund value. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there, your assets are matched to the liability. It's mm-hmm. it's your pool of money kept separately, if you want to imagine it. You want mm-hmm. to take it out, just take it out. But if you want to, if in an endowment contract, which is non-linked, non-participating, the money is pooled together. And mm-hmm. your behavior would have impact on everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay, so being an insurance expert, what would you advise so that when these advisors, they are reaching out to people to sell these policies, then how can insurance companies ensure that they are putting forth right information and those people are aware of all these points, exit option and different how much real IRR they are getting on these products? So these important information that usually people are not aware of. Most people are financially illiterate in India and they get into these products simply because it's easily available and a lot of people sell those products. From banking it happens and different channels it happens. So how can insurance companies ensure that these people are putting forth all right information to them?
Yeah. So I think there are three elements here. One is what insurance companies should do.
Mm-hmm.
Second, what the buyers of these products should do. And mm-hmm. third, why also understand why these products exist, right? If they are not the most efficient products.
Mm-hmm.
Let's first talk about what insurance companies should do.
Mm-hmm.
To ensure that there's limited mis-selling,
mm-hmm.
one, the IRRs should be declared, right? So if mm-hmm. I'm buying a policy with 20-year term, I should know what is the IRR that I'm going to get. And mm-hmm. that makes it that kind of solves for a lot of problem. So if I know it's, let's say, 6.5 and I get tax benefit, I would, as a regular customer, I might compare it with FDs and it might look better to me. And with that information, I might want to make a decision and continue to stick around. At the same time, highlighting, insurance companies should also highlight the fact what happens if you terminate. So that's not much talked about because then it could deter customer, right? We are talking about 20-year long commitment. Not everyone is would sign up for it. And if you look at exit options, it might look scary.
Mm-hmm.
So spreading that information is important.
Mm-hmm.
Second, while it's easier said than done, the mm-hmm. alignment of commission should be linked to the longevity of the contract. So
mm-hmm.
then there is an incentive for seller of the insurance policy to ensure it's sold only to those who are going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And this has two elements. One is people would stick around if they know that there is a value in it
mm-hmm.
and sticking around would generate returns. Second, mm-hmm. it is also sold to people who have the financial capability to pay premiums for that longer duration.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that happens, the incentives continue to remain misaligned. And we are all driven by incentives, right? If I'm going to get much, much higher commission in the first year as compared to following years, I have more incentive as a seller of an insurance product to churn your insurance portfolio. Right? So But then it's also important. And why I say it's practically difficult, there's more nuance to it. One, insurance, life insurance company, industry is like an oligopoly, right? If I do it, let's say insurance company A aligns the commissions to the longevity of the policy policy contract and rest industry doesn't align, then every sales guy would move to other companies, right? So then it can't be one player taking the action here. And then you might want to say the regulator can come and pitch in.
Correct.
But it's also important to also realize that there are multiple forces involved here. One is, of course, the policies should be sold to the right set of individuals. Second, we also there's also a reason to increase penetration of life insurance or insurance in general in the country, right? So if you make it difficult for people to sell policies, even that goal would also be hurt. So there are practical challenges around doing it. So what is that policyholders can do, right? While in insurance industry, regulators could play their part, there's also a part to be played by policyholders, right? While it's said that insurance products are sold and not bought, but they're not sold on gunpoint. If you, a policyholder, is willing to pay 50,000 premium annually, you might as well spend some time trying to figure out what you're buying, what you're getting into, right? If you, if you, even before investing 3 or 4 hours in watching a movie, you first go for review. Right? At least that much effort or proportion and approach should go into it, right? So one, understanding what you're buying.
Right.
Second, asking your financial holder, financial advisor, what is another combination of product which will solve my same financial goal? So for example, if I'm buying a life insurance contract to solve for financial goal, which is saving enough money for my kids' education or higher education, which would happen, which I would need 10 years later. And this goal should be met whether I die or survive. So this is my financial goal. So one way to do it is buy an endowment life insurance policy with the maturity benefit that matches with the amount of money that I expect to spend 10 years later. So that's one way of solving it. One way of meeting that financial goal. But there are other ways of doing it as well, right? If I'm, I have higher risk appetite, I might go for equity focused mutual funds and buy a term insurance contract to take care of the death scenario. If I am, I have low risk appetite, then I would buy a lesser term insurance and maybe an FD, which also could solve all the problems.
Right.
So asking your financial advisor, what other combinations of products would help me achieve the same goal?
Right.
And then deciding, okay, I'm not a financially savvy customer, for example, then I don't want to deal with two products. I don't want to buy a term insurance and an FD. Make it difficult for my survivors or myself to manage those. So, okay, I'll go ahead with a life insurance policy. And then I'm making a conscious call, knowing that this is not the most efficient product, but it comes with a lot of convenience. So I'll go ahead and do it. So,
perfect. And that's also, right. And let's also talk about secondary market for insurance policies.
So there's third part to it, which is asking what commissions. What is that you as a financial advisor are gaining by selling me this contract? So understand where the incentives, how incentives are stacked up.
So if you are, will lie.
No, it's by law, in benefit illustration, you the insurance companies are required to show commission structures. Right? So ask three questions. What is the, asking for IRR? Second, asking for the combination of products that would solve the same problem. And third, understanding how incentives are stacked up.
Right. Okay. Now, moving on to a few suggestions that a few industry experts have been talking about, that having a secondary market for life insurance policies, and it has been under discussion for a decade. So just explain our listeners about it. What is it about? And can this be... maybe IRDA can take an action on it, looking into it. Could this be worked out?
Yeah. So secondary life insurance market. So currently, let's say if a policyholder doesn't want to carry on with existing life insurance contract, the only option that pretty much the only option that the policyholder has is surrendering it to the insurance company they bought policies from or going for a paid-up option. Both are suboptimal. Because you get a negative IRR in case of surrendering, in case you choose to surrender. And the IRR in paid-up could be positive, but it's again not up to the mark. So can there be a better option to it? In some markets, there is a secondary market for life insurance policies, which means that you could go ahead and theoretically trade it, trade your life insurance contract, basically sell it to someone else, which is done through an absolute assignment, but let's not get into technicalities. So essentially, if I were to surrender my policy, I have an option to sell it to someone else. Like I can sell it to you, right? The question is, why would you buy it? And there are multiple reasons to it. One, since the surrender benefit that you as a policyholder were going to get were negative, and a maturing policyholder gets good 5.5% as IRR or even 6%, right? And this is all tax-free, assuming some boundaries apply, right? So if I start, if I buy a policy halfway through at a price lower than at a price which is lower than the premiums that I would have paid if I had bought from day zero, my IRR jumped from 5.5, 6 to maybe 7, 8, or even 9, right? So now you have a contract which pays you 9%, 8 or 9% guaranteed returns, backed by an insurance company which is regulated. And this contract is unlinked to how markets perform because it's guaranteed.
Right.
And this is all tax-free. And then it becomes meaningful. So how much more you can get from selling your policy, life insurance policy, then is driven by market forces. Because someone might just be happy with 8, someone might just be happy with 7.5. So you get the optimal price by selling it to someone else. However, your IRR would still be negative.
Right, correct. All right. So yes, so secondary market should be considered.
And yeah, it should be considered. I think there's, I already am aware of some of the startups in India who are into this business. So yeah, it's, but I think the regulation is not super clear. It's not
All right. So people doing it in existing scenario may not be a wise idea. Because people doing it in the existing scenario through that startup may not be a good idea because regulations are not that clear yet.
Yeah, I would not do it. But some people might have a higher risk appetite.
They might. They can, surely. Okay, so thank you so much, Sumit, for sharing your views with us and simplifying this whole topic for us. Any last word that you have to mention about this subject?
So my only thought is that the couple of nuances when we think about surrender benefits and surrendering policyholders, it's important to realize that a higher surrender benefit would mean lower IRR to maturing policyholders, and that is not fair. Someone who stuck around for 30 years should be getting higher benefit than someone who chose to terminate contract halfway through. So that's one important part. Asset liability matching is a technical part, but equally important part of it. Offering higher surrender benefit is not a solution to mis-selling. It just softens the blow. The mis-selling should be solved at the point of selling and not after it has been sold.
Right. You have summarized it quite well. Thank you so much, Sumit.
Thanks a lot, Aparajita.
I hope the episode was useful for you. Feel free to reach out to me on X and LinkedIn. My X handle, Apri_Sharma. And on LinkedIn, you can search me by my full name, which is Aparajita Sharma.
For more such interesting podcasts, keep tuning into htsmartcast.com. Thank you.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.